Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Steph, and this is the Don't Buy Her Flowers podcast and the second episode of our Lost for Words series, talking about subjects that often leave people not sure what to do or say. I'm going to get straight into it. This episode, we're talking about baby loss, and there are a few things I just want to cover off first. If you're not in the right headspace to listen to a conversation about baby loss, skip this one and please take care of yourself. If you're looking and ready for help and support for baby loss, or even just to know what to say or do if it happens to someone you love, I hope we can help. My guests today are Caro, Al and Jen, aka The Other Mothers, the name of their podcast they started towards the end of last year. I listened to the whole of the first series, the second is coming out soon, and I found it really helpful to hear their stories firsthand of losing their, for each of them actually it was their firstborn baby, all different experiences, and we talk about those initial weeks after loss, but also big themes for all of them about guilt, loss of identity, the impact on friendships when everyone around you is having babies, and also with their partners too. They all do lots of awareness and fundraising, and Jen and I have actually worked together through Don't Buy Her Flowers and Teddy's Wish for a few years. Jen set up the charity Teddy's Wish with her husband Chris after the totally unexpected death of their baby boy Eddie when he was only 3 months old. Both Elle and Cara are patrons of Teddy's Wish, and the charity raises money to fund potentially life-saving research into SIDS, which is formerly known as cot death, neonatal death and stillbirth, and to provide bereavement support for grieving families. Jen came to me at the start of 2020 about creating a care package for bereaved families who have recently lost a baby, and we've created a couple of packages, including one with Elle's book, Ask Me Is Naming It. These are available to buy at Don't Buy Her Flowers, but if you're going through any loss to stillbirth from 24 weeks, neonatal death or SIDS in the past 6 months, they would love to send you a package paid for by Teddy's Wish, and Don't Buy Her Flowers gives a donation for each package too. Just email jennifer@teddyswish.org. I'll put all that information in the notes so you don't have to worry about it now. I actually had a message the other day from someone who'd received a package from Teddy's Wish a while ago, and she now uses the tag as a bookmark because it has the name of her baby on it. It's something that Jen is really deliberate about, to include the baby's name. And in this episode, we talk about why that can be important for someone who's lost a child. I'd like to quickly thank Natural Mat for sponsoring this episode and series. They hand make organic beds and mattresses in Devon, and I'll tell you more about them in a bit, but you can get 15% off your first Natural Mat order with the code DBHF15. Okay, so on with the episode. We recorded this face-to-face, which was really lovely, as I've done most of the podcasts online. So it might sound a bit different to usual, but also if you've been in a room with four women talking quite passionately, well, you'll know it can get quite noisy and there'll be some overlap in the conversation. I was quite nervous to record this episode because I didn't want to get it wrong. And listening back to it, there are a few things that made me kind of wince, but I think that's what these ladies are, in part, what they're doing. They're saying it's uncomfortable, but the more we do it, the less uncomfortable it will get. And we need that to happen because someone who has lost a baby is already potentially feeling very alone. So I started by asking them about their podcast, The Other Mothers.
So how did the podcast get started?
Jen, I'll let you tell us.
Who's going to claim it?
Okay, so I run a charity, Teddy's Wish, which was set up after we lost Eddie. And Elle and Cara are amazing patrons, and we're very, very lucky to have them as patrons. And I had been speaking to Elle. We had a really long chat, didn't we, about it? We were talking about... Elle always gets asked to be on podcasts.
Yeah, only because of the books, I think. Because of the books and because of the things I've done with Tommy's, I've become kind of like a frequent podcast guest on the scene, as it were. And you were asking me some advice about... about podcasts in general, weren't you? Saying that you wanted to do something through the charity. You wanted to do like another free resource for parents. And then it just kind of, I turned around and said, well, why didn't we do it? Jen being Jen was like, absolutely no, I do not want to get behind a microphone, like, you know. And I was like, no, we can do it. And I said, let's ask Caro, because we were going to Caro's house that week or something. And I was like, when we see Caro, let's ask her. Let's just say, you know, we're all mates anyway. Why don't we just? And of course, she was like saying yes before we'd even finished the sentence, because you were like, this is brilliant. This is therapy for all of us. So,
does it feel like therapy?
Massively. Yeah, totally. Because all of us have very, very different stories and how we got to this point. But obviously, there's huge crossover in feeling, in what could have helped us. We're like, yeah, people said this. Yeah, oh, actually someone said this to me. And it was like, who said the shittest thing? Which, you know, totally. What to say, what not to say. And that's where the crossover is. So even though the situations were very different, there's so much crossover. And it was hugely, I felt therapized after every time I'm hooked up with these two.
There's threads and there's themes and there's things that you all go, oh my God, yeah, that I felt like that. But also you all dealt with the losses in different ways.
Yes, and that's the thing about grief. Everyone deals with it in different ways.
Yeah.
But what's also amazing is that we all had different losses, but we all lost our first baby boy. Mm. And the names, it's...
Oh, yeah, weird.
Freddie, Eddie, and Teddy.
So Freddie was Caro's son.
Yeah, Freddie's me.
Eddie was Jen's son, and Teddy was Elle's son.
Yeah.
When we first met, we clocked that really quickly. We were like, oh...
Yeah.
Listen to us, you know, check out the names of our kids,
that
kind of thing. So that was sort of already a thing. But there is so much crossover. There is so much, you know, Jen is bang on. Our losses are different, but actually our feeling and the journeys we've taken from there are hugely similar. And it's that whole, when I, going back to Fred 20 years ago, is a very, very, very long time. And there was no resources at all, really. Sort of a bit of a pamphlet I was given to read that might help. But there was a lot, which is fine, and you know, but not fine also. So I wanted there to be a resource when the girls spoke to me about it. I'm like, oh, what I wouldn't have done, actually, for this. Yeah. What I would not have done. I might have opened the blinds before a month was out. I might have stopped wearing black. I might have spoken to someone. I might have actually felt, you know, I got a lot of... Now, listen, you know, we're going to see so-and-so today. Maybe don't mention Freddie because you might make them feel uncomfortable. You know, there was lots of that back then. Lots of don't make other people feel uncomfortable. And I think having a resource like this might make people feel a little bit like, actually, you know what? People need to be comfortable or uncomfortable with what I'm saying. It doesn't actually matter.
Well, what you're doing, I think... If someone's on Instagram and they follow you guys and they all they've been through loss themselves, they might think that the conversation is happening all the time and that people are less uncomfortable than they would have been. But and it's better than it was, like you say. And I love how Elle always references how long ago you lost your baby. Like, because you're so old.
You know, going back to what Caro just said about leaving the hospital 20 years ago with a leaflet, nothing much had changed by 2016. You know, Teddy died in May 2016, and as I left the neonatal unit without my son, I was given a bundle of leaflets of, this is how you might feel, this is how your family might feel, this is this, and some footprints and a lock of hair, and off you go.
And actually, even in those early days, even if you're given a leaflet that's full of really helpful information, you're so, in such a daze. You're in such a daze. You don't even know what you're just like, that goes to, it almost gets thrown away because you're just
reading
in such a daze.
Surely is just
exactly.
You can read a sentence. You know, I couldn't even figure out what's going on in my mind. And I think we all said that, didn't we? That was why we were so passionate about starting the pod, was because what I did find easy in those early days was listening to other people or reading shorter posts on Instagram from people who had been through it. That was how Michelle and I initially connected, because she was writing about Orla and I was thinking about writing about Teddy, but didn't quite have the confidence, I guess, to do it because I didn't want to upset or offend anyone. Like Caro said, like, well, don't say too much.
Were you quite hungry for it? Were you to find writing or something to read or someone who'd been through it?
Absolutely.
Yes,
I because it's so isolating. Even though you read, once it's happened to you, you read the statistics and you know you're not the only one. You know that. You can see that. You can see how many people are affected, how many families it happens to every day. But for some reason, you still feel like the only one. And then people start to come out of the woodwork. And I know you were really lucky because you met Alice and she was one of your neighbours. And for me, a few people who were, you know, family, friends said, oh, you know, this had happened to such and such many years ago, or this had happened. But I wanted a closer connection. I guess I wanted to travel that journey with somebody who had been through it or was going through it. And I hope that with this, with our podcast, we can be that for people who maybe can't find it online or can't find it in person. We can be that thing that they can listen to when they're out on the walk or they're in the house on their own in the day because they're still on maternity leave, and it will feel like they're talking to a friend, because I would have really benefited from that.
You talk about those first bits, and I just wanted to talk about sort of three things. So one was about in the hospital, because you say you were about wanting to press pause, that just like you said, that you get given these leaflets, you've got to make decisions about what you're going to do with the body and what you're going to do, like, just so much that someone who's completely traumatized can't possibly know what they want or what you might want in 6 months' time or 6 years' time.
Well, I think that's where you are stronger together. You know, I had Greens with me.
For context, that's her husband.
My husband now. He wasn't my husband then. Yeah. But yeah, that's my husband. The thing is, when you are about to give birth and it's your first baby, you are in a very vulnerable position. And actually, we were talking about this only yesterday. And knowledge is power. So a really, really great piece of advice would be to ensure that you and whoever is holding your hand during that vulnerable time is fully knowledgeable of as much as possible. Things like what we've been through is something that you can never prepare yourself for. So because it's unfathomable. You know, it's just, you just can't believe it's going to happen.
That's quite unusual. And that's, in most situations, you might go, well, how would we deal with this?
But I guess if you're pregnant, you can't
it's not
do that.
Then you're going to even think
about it. Something you're willing to consider. But the thing is, I think, because it's the worst, isn't it? It's where it's the worst. Ever.
Yeah, but also it's something that you really shouldn't have to prepare yourself for. Yeah. I mean, I'm certainly not going to prep my kids, really.
Yeah.
I don't think so anyway. You know, but it's one of those situations where you are given choices that you don't think you're going to have to make. A lot of what you're given are just that, just choices. So you, it's not like you're like, well, I might have it this way and I might do it this way and I might, you are given limited choices. Mm-hmm. So whilst you do have to make them pretty swiftly, I don't know how else you would prepare yourself for that. Mm. So, and a lot of the choices you are given might be culture ones as well, because for different,
A vicar coming in, and in hindsight, you were like, I didn't want a vicar.
Well, actually, in the end, I said to Mum, it was one of those situations, because I'm not religious in any way, shape or form, I almost felt a little bit bad, because I was
there to do his thing.
He's there to do his job. And then I thought, well, hang on. Yeah. Just because I don't believe in God doesn't necessarily mean that I should project that choice onto my child. What if my child grew up and wanted to believe in God? You know, So I was like, okay, well, he can sort of be here and maybe we cover that base, because that's, I was, you know, I'm really, I raise my children in a very sort of, your choice, these are your choices, respect everybody else's choice, but it is a choice. And so in that moment, it was one of those really weird things. It is, you're like, what are you doing here? But he sort of just hung around. It was one of those very, very weird moments that I remember sort of it almost in a sort of blurred way. And I remember saying to Greens, you know,
Who's this guy?
So those choices are weird. I mean, for certainly in my situation, Freddie was put into the morgue. And I know everybody deals with that in a very different way, but I felt very strongly that I wanted to be near him all of the time. Yeah. So I used to sit in the reception at the Chelsea and Westminster Hospital until they let me in, every single day he was there, until we took him to be cremated. So I just couldn't, I didn't have anything else to do with my life. That was all my life. Yeah. That was all I had. And at home was just like bits of the nursery waiting in a bagged up in a box. Yeah. So I didn't really want to be there. I just wanted to sit with all of his little belongings in reception, and they literally just let me do that. There are loads of different pieces of this where you don't know how you're going to feel on any given day. And actually, the choices that you have to make are almost sort of lined up in a really cruel way in front of you. It's like A, B, or C. You are very limited to your choices at this stage.
Also, I think we've talked about, this on that particular episode of how we all chose and did different things, was that there's this incredible overwhelming feeling that you don't want to get it wrong. Yeah. Because what if you bury your child and then decide that that's not what you wanted because you weren't of sane mind?
Which is an impossible decision, right?
You can never exactly. What if you... And I know that Michelle and I have had this conversation before because we both had Teddy and Orla cremated, and obviously they were born within a couple of weeks of each other. So although Orla was stillborn and Teddy died neonatally, we both kind of made quite similar choices, and we both had this idea that we were going to scatter their ashes, and neither of us have. Neither of us did, and we had a long conversation about it one day, I remember, at her house, and she said to me, and it was quite funny, it's quite dark humour, but I think you get used to that.
You guys are good.
I get used to that. Yeah. And she said, I've just got this horrible vision that I'll be in a place and we'll be there and we'll go like that with the thing. And then she said, as they're going off into the wind, I'll be like, oh no, no, back. Like, you know, scrambling. Yeah. And she said, and you can't undo that. You can't. Yeah. So you have to be... And I still have Teddy's ashes now. He would be seven in May, and I still have them. And I'd always thought, well, you know, if we're ever lucky enough to have another child, I know where they're going to go, and that's when I'll do it. And that time has come and gone. And every time we go down to Cornwall to the house there, I take them with me, and then I
today's the day,
and then I bottle it. And it's
but
just
that sounds like a right thing to do. Yeah. Like you're not forcing yourself to do something that you might change your mind about.
So in 50 years' time, you know, we have this conversation again. Yeah.
But you see, that's I still have Freddie's ashes. I haven't scattered them, and I'm with you on that. Mm. This is where we see what I mean. The crossover is so there. I'm like, no, I'm going to wait until we live in the house we're going to retire to. Then that's it. That's when I'll do it. Look, I'm just putting it off, aren't I? But you know what I mean? My point being, when the time's right, the time's right. And there's lots of this felt right at the time. And when people go back and say, God, I really regret not doing this. It is so hard, but it's never a backward step. You have to keep moving forward. And
you can't change it.
And already your situation is so sad and so... It's like this bottomless pit of grief at times, which sounds really dramatic, but it does feel very hopeless. The very last thing I would want anyone to do listening to this would be like, oh, what am I going to do? Make that decision, make it together, or make it with people that are supporting you, and it's okay. It's okay. It's okay, because the very last thing you want anyone to do is feel any more sadness or regret.
Because Jen, yours was driven more by
religion. So Chris is Catholic, but I'm Jewish. Mm-hmm. So in the Jewish tradition, and actually we both agreed to do this, that Eddie would have a burial. But there is a very formulaic way in Judaism, and actually there's something quite comforting in this, because you kind of don't have to think for yourself, because it's all set out for you, is that you are meant to bury within 24 hours. Right. And so it's not meant to be a long drawn out process. So, but what was really hard for us is that Eddie died, it was just over this bank holiday period in Easter. So you know you've got these sort of like the 4-day. It was awful, because it kind of exasperated all our pain and grief, because Eddie, it meant that we couldn't get the burial done quickly, and Eddie was actually in the Royal Free for a week. And we had my brother-in-law and Chris, my husband, went down to like St Pancras to try and just, you know, sort it all, you know, went to the coroner's office, tried to like get it through quickly and get it, you know, and they were very like, computer says no, it was awful. But once we'd gone through that, there was something quite comforting in knowing what we were going to do.
It was all mapped out.
And then there's a period of mourning in Judaism called it's called a shiva, where for 7 days family and friends come to your house every day, and it's called the period of mourning. And they literally wrap you in cotton wool, they come in, they fill your fridges with bagels and so much food. And there was something quite nice knowing that that was going to happen. without me having to do anything.
That was one of my things about in those initial that initial period, because you each had quite different. Well, Caro, you wanted to draw the curtain. Well, you did.
I was so angry and so miserable and have been ever since.
And you didn't want to see anyone, and it was dark. You wanted that.
Yes.
Whereas you had. Jen, you had family,
which is much healthier.
Well, and they all built
do
a garden.
What Jen did. Yeah.
I love the garden story. Tell the garden story, Jen.
The garden is lovely. The garden
so we
is
had
lovely.
Just moved into our what was meant to be our family home.
Yeah.
We'd only been there for 6 weeks, and the one area that hadn't been touched was the garden. And it starts. So my mother-in-law was like, everyone feels they've got to do something.
Yeah.
And they kind of, you know, a lot of people go into practical mode. And my mother-in-law was like, right, I'm going to get the lawnmower and I'm going to just start mowing the grass. And then Chris and my brother-in-law went into the garden. They just started doing other things in the garden. And then anyone who came to the garden just went, everyone who came to the house went straight into the garden and just started like, weeding and pulling stuff out and clearing. And my sister affectionately called it the Garden of Hope, because the garden was just transformed into the most beautiful. It was just amazing. It was like, it was this healing space for us. And then we found a tree for Eddie. We planted a beautiful magnolia that blossoms around his anniversary in April. Yeah. So it became really symbolic of a place for especially for the boys, because boys sort of are much more action orientated in grief. They feel that they've got to do something. Yeah. So it was like all the men went into the garden. Most of the women just used to just sit there with me and cry and eat. We did go in the garden as well. But it was interesting to see that as well.
That reaction.
Yeah. But it was, it became really symbolic.
Yeah. Well, I suppose everybody must be different. I know, Elle, in your book, so Ask Me His Name, which we should mention, which is an amazing book. Then you, I remember reading that you, just the emptiness of the house felt really so quiet. Stark, even though that's what it had been prior to you going into the hospital.
Yeah, and I think, so my parents were there when we said goodbye to Teddy, and I just remember saying to my mum, oh, please come home with us, like, please don't drive back down to Dorset, like, please come home with us, like, I need you, please come. And obviously they were going to, and so my parents came and stayed with us for a few nights, and in that time my husband's parents came, and my brothers and my husband's sister and brother-in-law, we saw everyone in that week, although I'm not Jewish and I'm not particularly religious. It was just a thing that everybody felt that they needed
that
to be there for us. Yeah, and then we got like a week in, and I remember saying to my husband, I feel so claustrophobic, I need to leave, I need to go. And so we went down to Cornwall, and because I grew up near the sea, and for me, I kind of get this sense that unless I'm sitting on a beach staring at a horizon, I don't really feel like anything makes sense. I feel like that for me is the place that I need to go to just sit and stare and make sense of what the hell had just happened. And so that was what we did. We did that for 4 days and just stayed in a little place that nobody could find us, that was really quiet. And I just needed, after being wrapped in all that love, I just needed to go and sit and be quiet and work it out. Not that you do, but that for me just made more sense. So I kind of guess I did a bit of both, really.
Natural Mat are the sponsors of this series, makers of organic beds and mattresses since 1999. It's a great fit for us, as anyone who follows me online will know that I blooming love sleep. I wish I had more of it, and I blooming love a nap as well. So at Natural Mat, all of the key materials they use in their beds and mattresses come from natural, sustainable and renewable sources, even buying their organic wool from farms on their doorstep in the southwest. They make everything themselves by hand in their solar-powered Devon factory, and in 2020 their sustainability efforts were rewarded with a Queen's Award for Sustainable Development. They also recently launched their Mattress for Life initiative. So when your natural mattress reaches the end of its lifespan, you have three options: refurbish, recycle, or donate, ensuring a Natural Mat mattress never ends up in landfill. Don't Buy Her Flowers listeners can get 15% off their first Natural Mat order using the code DBHF15, either online or in their London, Devon, or Cotswold showroom.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And with the feelings, we've mentioned Caro's rage that you talk about just being so angry, but Jen, you'd
and said, pretty horrible to everyone actually.
I was miserable
to everybody, horrible to my mother, horrible to my husband. He wasn't even my husband at the time. I was just horrible.
And you said no to support.
I had said no to everyone and everything. And then someone came and said, you know, John, the Child Bereavement Charity, who are an incredible source, mm-hmm. by the way, and we fully, as ambassadors, support them. They're amazing. I was like, has this person lost a baby? Mm. No. Well, how in heaven's name is that human going to help me? Because frankly, I'll just talk to the wall. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I don't need someone that's... I was so angry.
Yeah.
And I didn't want anyone in my house. I didn't want anyone near me. I was so angry. And we lived in Southfield at the time, Wandsworth, which is like, they call it Nappy Valley for a reason.
Yeah.
So I couldn't put my head out the window without hearing a baby crying or someone walking with a stroller or the buggy that we'd ordered or the high street was a wash, no less, with small humans everywhere. So I just thought I would sit in my pit of despair and just feel really... Do you know what? I didn't actually feel sorry for myself. I didn't go,
just
woe
really
is me.
Angry.
I didn't even say, why me, really. I did a little bit, but not massively. Mm. I was just a miserable, horrid, honestly, I was like a bomb waiting to go off.
Being Do you think me. That was in Awful. Part because 20 Actually. Years ago, people had even less of the language needed for you to even comprehend it? But also
I was not. I was almost banned from talking about it. Mm. Talking about Freddie, okay. Don't say his name. And I love my family, but they did not know what to say. When you start to have babies, there's a reason for that. You're ready, and therefore your friends are probably ready.
Yeah.
I think there had been 5 births within 4 months of me having it. I had pregnant friends. My sister had just had a baby. My mum, who is divine, did not know what to do with me.
No.
And didn't want me to talk about it to people because she didn't want them to feel uncomfortable. You know, she was born in 1942.
Yeah.
You know, judgment was everywhere.
I just had Carrie Ad Lloyd on the podcast and she talked about, she was amazing, but she was saying about people think they can, well, with death, that people think they're going to catch it.
Yes.
But even more so because the idea of a baby dying or a child dying is like the worst thing that people
horrifying.
Can imagine.
And I used to joke at the beginning when I would talk to my pregnant friends, you know, I'd say, look, it's not catching. And I would, and people would look at me mortified that I just said that out loud.
But
because that's always been my sense
it.
Of humour and I hadn't had a personality transplant and I was trying to show them that they could still say wildly inappropriate things in front of me and I wasn't going
to... Probably did you want them to say wildly and almost something, don't sit and look at
and
me.
And I can remember, and I write about it and ask me his name, where I kind of got hold of my friend's hand when she came to see my mum's house and I said, please just talk to me like me. I'm still me.
Yeah.
I remember looking at her and like, begging her because she was being so weird and like tiptoeing around me and trying to be, and we'd never been like that. Our relationship had been based entirely on taking the piss out of each other, and she was not taking the piss out of me.
People are well meaning.
We're talking about this last night. I was saying it's misplaced good intentions. They're not bad people. They just don't know what to do.
Yeah. And in fairness to the people around me, I was so horrible. You'd be tiptoeing around me, and I would. I look back, and I can see now why people were like, shit,
terrifying.
Don't go in there. I was terrifying. So I think I can safely say I can understand how people, but we, going back to what we were saying earlier about what not to say and what to say, I know that's sort of coming up, but back in the day in 02, I had mountains of, there'll be more babies.
At least you can get pregnant.
I had a lot of, life goes on a lot. I'm like, oh shit, does it? Life
things
goes on, does
for
it?
Reason.
Things
that
happen
was the
for
worst.
A reason. I've written those two down.
Things happen for a reason.
The stupid things that you come up quite a bit. Everything happens for a reason.
Oh. My auntie's sister's cousin in 1972 had a friend that had a, and I'm like, mm-hmm. Are we done, or are you going to keep going?
And the thing is, as humans, you want to relate, don't you? Yeah. So you always want to go, I know how you feel, or I can imagine how you feel, but actually, if someone hasn't been through it, they can't. So what could they say that would be?
I can't imagine what you're going through.
Yeah.
I don't want to sit here in silence, but I want to say to you that I acknowledge Freddie, I acknowledge Eddie, I acknowledge Teddy, and I don't know what to say to you. I can't imagine how it must be feeling, but I want to help you. Mm-hmm. If you need me and I can help you, let me bring some plates of lasagna. Let me bring some food. Can I do the garden? What can I do? Also, do you want to talk about him?
I think the other thing is when people say, oh, let us know if we can do anything. I can tell you that I'm never going to let you know. I didn't reach out to any of my friends and say, please, can you do this? Please, can you come and see me? Please,
isn't
can you...
Isn't it funny that, because that was Carrie-Anne's one thing not to say, and it's almost, the more we were talking about, the more I was thinking, it pacifies the person saying that, doesn't it? Because they think, well, I asked if I could do anything, because they're scared of this thing and they don't know how to speak to you. So it's like, let me know if I can do anything. Oh, well, I offered.
Yeah,
now I can go and get on with my life.
You see, I think I could say to someone, if there was a podcast that was helpful, whether it be this one or another one, that I would go, I'm not going to ever ask you for help, but I am really grateful for you, A, validating his name, which is, I think we need to give credit to Elle here, because I have met people going to different whatever events or whatever, and people have said to me, which is another weird question, by the way, if we put it out there, oh, have you got any kids? Don't ask people that. It's just a, don't ask people if they've got kids. Mm. I always say, I don't know why we feel the need as humans that we should, is that, you know, and I do have children. I'm really, really lucky. And I always say, I've got 3 children. We had a baby, Freddie, as well. Or we had another baby who sadly died. And I remember at the time someone saying to me, this must have been about, your book won't have been long out, actually. And she said, I'm so sorry, what was his name? And I went, oh, his name was Freddie. Mm. And she goes, I've read Elle's book. And I was like, that's so lovely. Yeah. And I know it's unusual, and it is unusual. I don't think 20 years ago, I don't think before that book, actually, anyone really would have done that. And I think that is really, really lovely.
Because it's a continuation of the conversation. Yes. It's not, I'm so sorry. Yeah. Because that, I think that was the thing for me. And Ask Me His Name almost didn't get called Ask Me His Name. I think we just came up with that in a brainstorming meeting one day, and it was like a light bulb. It was all those conversations that I had thereafter with so many different people. And, you know, you would say, do you have any children? And I'm like, well, I'm just sitting in a hairdressing chair getting my hair done. And, I just don't know what to say in this moment. And so I would choose whether to say yes or no. And sometimes if I said yes, and then they'd just say, oh, God, I'm so sorry. Or they'd change the subject completely. And I think Ask Me His Name was kind of a culmination of all those feelings that I had during all those conversations where I was like, how can we carry it on? How can we make it normal? Because for example, my daughter now, who's here and she's 2.5, if I tell someone I have a 2.5-year-old daughter, they say, oh, what's her name? Like really normal. Or, you know, what's she like? Or where is she today? Or who's looking after her? And so, that was kind of the point of it, really.
It's equally a really odd question. I think, I don't know what different cultures and societies are like in different parts of the world, but I find the British one is like, are you married? Check. Do you have children? Check.
And what is it about the Brits that, you know, again, with grief, it's like they say, well, I didn't want to mention his name because I didn't want to upset you.
Yeah.
And it's like as if we'd just forgotten.
Yeah.
And
oh, you said
you've just mentioned my baby's name.
Yeah. I'm breaking down.
Yes. What is it about that as well?
Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing, isn't it? Like, we, you know, people don't want to say anything because they don't want to upset us.
I don't think people do it because they don't want to upset the person. I think they just don't want to feel uncomfortable. Yeah, people, this society is obsessed with not feeling, everyone must be comfortable. Everyone okay? Is everyone okay? Everyone comfortable? Yeah. Everyone okay? Yeah. No one mentioned the elephant in the room. Everyone okay? Everyone okay? I'm desperate to bring some discomfort to people because then we're comfortable with it.
So listen to the podcast, folks. Isn't it? Like, what a great advert.
But I think the things that we didn't talk about for years and years and years, like all of this stuff, like you hear about people who, or someone say, oh yeah, my grandma lost a baby, but no one ever mentioned it. Or my mum lost a baby and no one ever mentioned it.
Yeah. Well, I've had so many women write to me, even not that long ago, you know, in kind of, I'm talking 50, 60 years ago, they'd lost babies and they've read, asked me his name, and they've contacted me via email, or one of their children has contacted me to say, just to let you know, my mum's read your book. And I remember one lady contacted me, and she was telling me about her mother who'd lost her sister, who would have been in her 50s. And she'd never been able to see her, she'd never been able to hold her, and she'd been taken to a cemetery which she didn't know where that was, in an unmarked grave, or marked, you know, very sort of inconspicuously, somewhere in North London. And they contacted the hospital trust and they found out where she was, and they went and her mum went
really
to the grave
story.
And they just, you know, now they go to the grave and it's been marked and they've had a proper cross made for her and all of these things. And she said it was something my mum never felt like she had the confidence to do, because she was always told, don't talk about it, and made to feel like she shouldn't.
But do you think, what is that? Because you all talk about guilt, which I definitely want to talk about, and it feels so cruel that guilt and shame and those feelings are things that, on top of all this other bullshit, you've got to deal with. But the thing with guilt and shame is, like, that makes you more isolated, right? I think Brené Brown always talks about, like, when you have guilt and shame and you can't be vulnerable, you're isolating yourself even further, which for someone going through this feels so cruel. But I don't know if any of you can talk about that.
Well, from my point of view, I felt only guilt, anger, obviously, but also guilt, because Freddie was born early because my body failed him. You know, I have an incompetent cervix. I cannot carry a baby to term without without a suture, without a stitch.
Yeah.
And you only know this if, in this country, for example, we don't scan for it. In other countries, they do. This is part of the project, actually.
So you only know when it happens.
Correct. Or if you're you're very lucky and you have a specialist that scans your cervix, which is really, really, really unusual here. It's not. It happens in some European countries, but it doesn't happen here. We are trying to sort of fund a project at the moment that will do that. When I say we, I mean a charity that I work with. But so for me, the guilt was entire. You know, my husband's grief, my grief was entirely because my body could not hold him in.
Do you think it was the guilt that then made you feel angry?
I think it definitely added to it.
Because I find like the two...
I hated myself.
It has to come out somewhere, right?
And
you don't
want to
sit there just self-loathing, so it comes out in an action, which is...
I was so disgusted with myself. I was like, this is... All women can do this, because I just honestly haven't read anything. I know all women can't, by the way, and I don't mean that in an unkind or triggering comment. But I honestly was like, this is just me. This is just me. It's disgusting. I'm worthless.
And do you think part of the problem with the support at that time is that you weren't getting enough people saying to you, Cara, it's not your fault. Yeah.
Well, also, we didn't
and
know
you
why.
That reassurance.
So after he was born, we had the most appalling care. That's nothing to do with the person that then helped me have my other three children. But when we saw the person that was in charge of the hospital we were at the time, he said to me that he doesn't work there now. That I should just go and get pregnant, forget about it. because we don't really know what it is. And until you've lost at least three children, we won't even scan the cervix. So it was, and that doesn't really happen now, by the way, and he's now retired.
Oh,
yeah. But it was one of those situations where I thought, right, knowledge, knowledge, knowledge. And I read and I read and I read and I read, because even weird things like, and this is going to sound really funny, you know, at the same time, trying to get on Google or any sort of computers, you still heard it like, wind up. It's like back in dinosaur era. Mm. So it wasn't that helpful. So I used to try and, I'd order all these weird books from these weird little places in America, places like that. And I've still got them somewhere. Honestly, they're like limited edition. Finding out what they used to do to what they call, so when you start to contract, I contract quite early because of the issues I have with my cervix. And back in the day, they used to give women a lot of alcohol because alcohol settles. And so literally that's what they did, things like that. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, God, I wish they'd given me some alcohol. You know, it's just, and it is, you do. So for me, my guilt might have been, or if I don't know if anyone else resonates with the guilt. For me, the guilt was I was dripping in it because it was entirely, you know, I looked like, over I in the corner at Will, who was in absolute hell, in pieces. And I was like, that's on me. That's on me. Because it was all me. And we only found out that my cervix was incompetent when I was pregnant for a second time. That's when we found out. They're like, you have to carry on as normal, that this pregnancy is normal. I had a different gynecologist then, thank heavens. And he said, but I'm going to keep scanning you. I'm going to keep scanning you and I'm going to look after you. But the cervix moves. It can move within an hour. We're going to scan you once a week. And if we're lucky, we'll see it. That's, you know, it can move 10 minutes after you've checked it. So we just had to get lucky. So we didn't know. But I think the guilt thing is a really great question. Well, yeah, it's a great question.
I just hadn't really thought about it. And then when you all mentioned it, it did. And also I think it comes up in quite a few of the episodes.
Yeah. Like, and it's different. And it's different reasons. So Carrie's reasons was different. For me, it was, I think, because with SIDS, by its definition, is a diagnosis of exclusion. So doctors cannot tell you why.
Because Eddie was three months old.
You know, seemingly healthy baby boy. And when a doctor can't tell you why, you know, why did Eddie die, you automatically look inward and say, well, it must have been something that I did. Because I'm his mummy and I was with him 24/7. So who else's fault was it? It must have been me. And so I still grapple with that to this day. And that's been a lot, and I, you know, I have a lot of therapy about it, and you know, I'm better with it now. But it's, there's always going to be something in me that will wonder, what, you know, was it something I did? But that was also such a big driving force for us when we set up Teddy's Wish, because I was like, we can't just accept this as it's just one of those things.
You just
cannot.
Well, and all of you have taken your experiences and you're actively doing positive things, whether you're raising money, you've got a charity, or your patrons, or like all of that stuff. And do you think, I guess, is that an association with the guilt? Is that almost a driver?
I think it's just wanting no one else to feel that way. I don't know about you girls, but you know, if you think about early birth or stillbirth, there's an element of guilt because you feel like your body has failed that baby. Neonatal death or SIDS, there's something you feel like you could have done in those days, weeks, months. What did you do wrong? How did you fail that child as a mother or a parent that ended in that result? And I think once you felt those feelings of guilt that turn into sadness, or poor old me, or why me, or I'm really fucking angry at the world, I think you feel like, certainly the driving force behind me starting writing the blog, which then turned into the books, was, do you know what? I never want anyone else to grapple with these feelings in the way that I have. And I never want anyone else to lie awake at night feeling that level of guilt.
And not having that, not having anyone else's voice or experience, which you all felt.
I was really lucky because we got a diagnosis with Teddy. You know, it took 5 months, but we did get an answer as to why he died. He was born with something that was a metabolic condition that was not hereditary, so it was nothing that my husband and I carried. It was a lightning strikes, one of those things, time of conception. He was born with something that was never going to be compatible with life. So I kind of got something that Jen didn't get, which was a closure, a reason. A reason. I got this is why it happened. He was never going to be able to live with that thing. It was nothing you did. We can't tell you why it happened, which is another thing that you question forever and ever. But it, I got that answer, which I think some ways that's what the human brain craves. We crave a reason, an answer, something that we can start
a middle and a conclusion.
Yes. Yeah.
If there's a story.
And for me, it kind of closed the door on that 5 months of beating myself up consistently that I had done something in pregnancy or in that first time after he'd been birthed before he stopped breathing, I'd done something wrong. And it doesn't make it easier, but it gives you an answer. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It makes perfect sense, actually. And also at this stage, I think it's important to mention that if anyone is listening to this and they are supporting someone that is feeling guilty about the loss of their baby, one of the least helpful things that you can do, which is what I think all parents do, and my mum certainly did, through no fault of her own, is go, no, it's not your fault. Because actually, I didn't need validation, and I'm sure neither did Elle or Jen need validation of that guilt.
You needed to express it.
I needed to express it without someone trying to fix it, without someone going, no. Well, it was more important for someone to say to me, I'm really sad that you feel that way, and I wish I could stop that, but I know that I can't do that.
But also, I suppose if you can express it, then you can start to go, like, this is how I feel.
So you understand,
and then you can look at how do I get rid of that feeling, or what's the therapy.
But saying don't feel guilty to someone is like saying...
Because then you might secretly quash that you feel that guilt, and then you're not going to be able to help fix it. So that's
then start to feel guilty again, because I can't even say that I feel guilty. Do you know what I mean?
It's isolation, I think, it feels like a really fundamental... Like, again, the opposite of what you guys are doing by trying to share stories and involving other people, because that isolation is just not good for anybody. Yeah. And then you can't come to a resolution on your own.
No, really.
But also I think just on like the knowing, the not knowing, I think in all cases it doesn't change the outcome. Nothing's going to bring our boys back. And I think for all of us, and I hope, you know, I think I'm speaking on behalf of all of us, that what we're doing is that it's not going to bring our boys back, but it's, you know, it's our hope is that it's going to help others. And that's fundamentally what I'm doing with Teddy's Wish, is that it's not going to bring Eddie back, but if we can help others, then at least for me, it feels like that, you know, I'm doing something. And also we're doing something for our boys.
We all work within bodies of research as well. So all of us work and do charity stuff for, and I'm not saying it to be like, all of us work within, but it's more of a, This is part of it, saying to people listening to this, maybe try supporting this way. And other people listening might go, oh God, that's, no one is going to listen to this podcast and go, I feel exactly like Jen, I feel exactly like Elle, I feel exactly like Caro. But what they'll do is get little pockets and go, that's me, that's not me,
or
that's
me, I recognise that,
or that feels better, I can feel better about that. But also, so this is what we're here for here, but for me and for Greens and for the girls as well, we felt strongly that we wanted to do a lot of research as well and prevent early birth and research, you know. So I would like to think that Freddie and Eddie and Teddy, who have made an, you know, a huge mark on this world, having not been here for that long, in that we could, their names will be little names, that big little boys, but big names that have helped prevent someone going through it, scientifically speaking, and helped people that sadly are going through it and those supporting them. And I just think that that's an incredible legacy for them as well.
Because
and that's,
we're here for support in the now. Yeah. But I like to think that through the support and the work that we all do and lending our voice to charities like Tommy's and Jen doing everything that she does with Teddy's Wish, that, you know, we will get to a point when our children have children in the future, that the chance of that happening to them is so slim that it is almost unheard of. That's what I would like. That's my aim. Because, you know, we can support the people for which the worst has already happened, which is, you know, why what we will continue to do and why we continue to talk. But if we can stop it happening and do for more families, that's when we've really made an indelible mark.
That's where the science comes in.
And just on the, you mentioned like friendships and everybody around you being in that phase when you're having babies. And there was something that Elle said actually about that was the two things. You said about protecting your own heart and not putting yourself in that situation and being able to say, no, I'm not coming to that christening. Mm. I'm not coming to that family wedding, whatever it is. And you just said you have had to learn that that's not selfish. And I feel like that's a really good message, because I can imagine people, again, because of all the emotions that are going on, and whether that is guilt or shame or not being able to talk about it, mm. putting themselves in those awful scenarios, which just make them feel more bad.
Yeah. I got invited to a baby shower 8 weeks after Teddy died.
Oh, what's wrong with people? What's wrong with you people?
And but I know why they invited me.
Because it would be weird.
Because if they hadn't invited me, I didn't, in the age of social media that we live in, you know, I'm a pariah. Everyone thinks their baby's going to die now. It's all catching, you know.
But you talk about Becky.
Yeah.
And so this is your husband's
best friend's wife. Becky's getting a lot of airtime. She's going to love me for this.
I loved it because basically she's inviting you to stuff and you haven't seen very much of her. And then she just turned and said to you, I'm going to keep inviting you because I love you, and one day you might say yes.
I know. And every time anyone repeats that sentence back to me, it makes me want to cry, because I cried in the moment when she said it, because I was like, oh, fucking finally, someone gets it. I just wanted to grab her and be like, yeah, do you know what? I might say yes. I might say no consistently for the next 2 years, but one day I might say yes. And when I come, I'm going to be really good fun. Like, do you know what I mean? I was going to... Yeah, and it's just... I think that's the thing, is going back to what you said about how can you support someone. Because sometimes support begins and ends in those first weeks, and people go back to leading their normal lives. And I think the friends for me that really got it, and even continue to get it now, they know that there are things that are going to always be hard for us, or, you know, there are things that we still might not want to come to. And it's, just people like that who just... they remember the dates. They, you know, and that's really, that means a lot. Even just a message or something, it means a lot. And I think that support is continued. Like, it's not just in those first months when you're so in the depths of it all.
I don't think old friends as well sometimes always do know what to say. I found that people that I've met in the last few years, certainly these girls have been, with the greatest of respect, my oldest friends, they just didn't know what to do.
Is that because they worry about you talk about identity. Is it because they got you a certain person and they maybe...
I mean,
it's gonna change you.
I was not very well. I look back now and I normalised a lot of really bad shit. Yeah. So, I mean, like, I used to take... At Freddie's funeral, we got everyone to sign a book, and the thing that he had little mittens on when he was born, and I took those mittens, but everything else stayed on him. And I used to carry the mittens with me everywhere and take this book everywhere with me. So I would go to people's houses, like, months afterwards with it, like I was bringing him. And I'd say in the morning, right, we're going to go. I mean, it's terrifying, actually, looking back.
But it was a coping mechanism that...
I don't know. I remember my mum here. Yeah, there were lots of conversations.
Lots of that. She is with the book again.
Yeah, here she is downstairs.
Do you not think she
wouldn't let me leave the house.
But that's something that is quite stark, that idea that you... the identity of being a mother, and you've gone through pregnancy and then the baby isn't there.
Well, I had 3 months with Eddie, which was that was just so hard, because I felt like one minute I was a mummy, and then I said this on another episode, that everything then became past tense. Mm. So, you know, I was a mummy, we were parents, we had the buggy, we had everything, and then it just all, you know, everything went in just a split second.
So knowing who you are and that's so hard.
It was so, and also I had had and I had the experience of being with other mummies and their babies and doing, and
3 months
all,
in is,
you know,
is
and a, 3 months, yeah. you know, is that it's really
considerable
hard.
Amount.
It's you
didn't,
hard, it's
you
hard,
you
hard,
didn't have first baby.
You didn't have to imagine anything. That was your life.
And you kind of hit this point when you hit 3 months. It's like, it's a sort of turning point, isn't it? Mm. You sort of like, you really sort of enjoy it in a different way, motherhood. There's, you know, when you're, especially when it's your first, it's like everything's very like overwhelming and really hard. The sleepless nights. You're sort of starting to see the light a little little bit, aren't you? And so I had all of that, and then I felt like it had just all been taken away. And I felt like, you know, Carrie talks a lot about anger. Like, I was very angry at the unjustness of the world. Like, everything felt so unfair. Like, and there was a lot of why us, why me. Whereas Chris was actually a bit more pragmatic. He sort of saw it as this, like, this spinning wheel, and we just got fucking unlucky, and it just landed on us. And we didn't do anything wrong. It was just, you know, life does not discriminate.
Yeah, that sounds like a more male response. Yeah, he
was
very,
and I was just like, life is fucking unfair. Like, yeah, what? And, and I always described it as we were sort of like seeing our old life through this glass window, and like everyone else was on the other side of the tracks. And they were carrying on with their everyday life, and they had their lovely babies, and everything was wonderful, and everyone was healthy and lovely.
And they're still going to jungle gym.
Oh, yeah, and they're still doing all of that, going soft play, which I fucking hated anyway. Yeah. But anyway, you know, doing all of that stuff, and we were on this other side, and I could just sort of, it was like knocking on this glass and wanting to get through and be, you know, be back in my old life. But I was in this new life now, and everything had changed. And it was, how am I now going to find meaning in my life to carry on? And that was, yeah, my darkest moment was like, I just, and I think a lot of bereaved mums feel this way, they just don't want to carry on. And it's like, how do we get up again? And how do we find meaning again in life? And that's a, that is a journey. It's sort of, that takes time, I think. And I'd say probably my sort of advice for people who are in their early stages of grief, you know, we're talking about the do's and don'ts, but is to give, you have to give yourself time. Time is so important in grief.
I know they say time is a healer as well. I'm not
so much a healer, but I think it's...
you talk about moving forward and not moving on.
I think it's because I don't want to move on from Teddy. I don't want to move on. It's bad enough that I have to leave him in the past because, you know, time doesn't heal. You just get, like Janelle said last night, you just get further away from it. It just becomes, that pain is further away in the past. But then... also, that person who you loved, who you want to be here, is further away in the past. So you kind of have to find a way to take them with you into the present in what you're doing or how you remember them. And start to recognise yourself in that new identity. Because that, for me, I didn't recognise where I sat because I'd gone through this journey of being pregnant, having a baby, expecting to leave the hospital with that baby, and I didn't. And I just remember looking in the mirror, and it sounds, and I've wrote about it, I think, in Ask Me His Name and the second book. I didn't recognise who I was. I didn't really know where I sat in society because I was like, okay, well, I've got this time off work, which I'm going to use because I can't go back because I can't even think about facing everybody in my old job. And I didn't recognise who I was. I'd look in the mirror and I'd just be like, what the hell?
Well, also you've had pregnancy of like getting your head around that I'm going to be a mum and that becoming and that is a big part of anyone's identity, isn't it? If you have a baby, of being mum, then that's completely turned on its head. So it's just so.
And your body is doing all those things, so, you know, bleeding, milk, all of that stuff. And so the first 2 weeks for me were a complete write-off. And then after that, when, you know, the noise quietens and people start to go back to work, my husband had to go back to work. And I was like, okay, well, what am I now? Where do I fit? What do I do? And I guess that is probably when I turned to just writing everything down so that I didn't go completely and utterly mad. Because like Caro, I didn't want to talk to anyone unless they'd experienced loss themselves. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I thought, you remember thinking, well, why would I tell you? I wouldn't tell you anything that I won't tell my mum or one of my best mates. So that's pointless. Might as well, you know, just talk to myself or write it all down.
Yeah. That's what I did. And you've mentioned relationships, but you talk about there's a leaflet that you get handed that says that more than 50% of marriages end after baby loss.
Oh, yeah, that's a cheerful leaflet. That was
exactly what you need.
That was one of the things that I left the hospital with, I think, in the collection of sections of leaflets. There was a section for family and friends and health support, section this, section for that. Section on relationships that tells you your baby's just died, now your marriage is going to end. It's not the greatest stat, but sadly we laugh about it. That is the harsh reality.
It does put pressure on.
What do you think that is?
It's such a seismic shift in everything that you've ever known, anything that you recognise. The world around you becomes unrecognisable.
Yeah. And I think also men and women do grieve differently.
So differently.
They grieve. We did a whole
In general, they definitely do.
We spoke a lot about this. You know, men are... So healthy grieving is the balance between action-orientated grief and the emotional and the feeling. Yeah. And healthy is having the balance of both. But if you're doing too much of one and not the other, it can be unhealthy. And yeah. I think men sort of tend to sort of fall into the action, which is do. We've got to do something. And women tend to be more emotional. And so I think, and especially back in the olden days, women were seen as the chief grievers. So the support they would get would be, you know, the counsellor would go and see the mum as the chief griever, right. And the dad wasn't really involved. Yeah. And actually, one of the things...
He's back at work.
Yeah, he's back at work. And they were sort of seen... And their sort of grief was seen as less important. But actually, their grief is of equal importance. Mm. And one of the things that we do, like, with the counselling at Teddy's Wish is that the counsellors, if they are in a relationship, we really encourage, to, you know, the sessions to be with the partners, so the husbands and wives or partners.
I was going to say, if the stat is the 50%, and you can kind of start to understand why,
yeah,
what's the one thing that maybe, or what's the thing that perhaps the couples that do survive it have in common, or is there something that they do differently?
They talk. I think they're talking.
I think it's talking. Yeah. And understanding that other person might not be dealing with it in the same way that you are.
And we might be feeling things at different times. So, one of the things that Chris and I said to each other was that we would pick each other up when the other was down. Mm. And, you know, some days I'd be feeling worse than he would. And it was our roles was just to lift each other and be there for each other and accept that we were going to deal with this very differently. But each of our feelings were valid and... And we just spoke and we just constantly had that line of communication. We never sort of shut down each other.
Mm.
And actually, weirdly, I think Chris and I became closer.
We never wanted to lose Eddie to become closer,
but we definitely became closer.
It is bonding. Yeah. It is hugely bonding. It was for us.
I think I now feel that there is nothing that I could say to Nico that is too ludicrous or too, like, there's never a thing that I, like, 7-8 years ago me would have maybe kept to myself because I'd think, oh no, he's going to think I'm worrying about nothing. Whereas now I feel that because he's seen me at my most vulnerable and vice versa, I can just say exactly how I'm thinking and feeling and he won't go, oh God, you know, he'll just be like, right, okay, let's talk about it. And I think we've been exactly the same. It's just, if anything, it's just drawn us closer and closer,
which is a really safe place
in which to exist because you both understand what that bubble of grief has felt like.
Yeah. And grieving can be separate and still bonding. Yes. And I wonder if for those that sadly don't end up separating, and there's no judgment at all on that. That's a very personal thing. Perhaps that's not what their grief is too separating.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe that's right. But it can be a bonding thing.
I have taken up a lot of your time, so we're going to have to wrap it up. But I want to just say, if there's anything that these ladies have said. At the moment, there's like 5 or 6, we're not sure what episodes.
And these guys are right. My stats are terrible.
But there's a new series coming as well. And I think it just... But as a human, I think it's something that people should listen to because you will come into contact with people, if you've not been through it yourself, who have. And it just might help you be a better friend or partner or sibling or... But I suppose the final question is, what is the one thing you would say to someone supporting someone through baby loss?
Don't fix what can't be fixed. Okay. Because the only thing you want back can't be brought back. And the only thing we want is our babies. So don't try and fix us.
Mm. Okay, that's Jen. Elle?
I would say... it's always difficult giving advice because everyone's so different and everyone's reactions so different. I guess I would say don't be afraid to talk about that child in a normal way. You know, I love the fact that my friends say, oh, when you were pregnant with Teddy, like, they don't flinch at it. He is a part of conversation and it's natural and it's normal. And even if that does kind of jerk you a little bit at first and it feels a little bit uncomfortable, it will start to feel normal eventually. And trust me that your friends will really value you for doing that and they'll be really thankful that, you know, you were able to make it feel more normal for them and make them feel less
isolating. It's so interesting that that idea, you have basically, yeah, you've got to get uncomfortable. This will be an uncomfortable scenario. There's no two ways about it.
It'll feel weird at first.
Yeah.
But the more you do it,
then it becomes.
Yeah, it will become.
And that's exactly what I would underline. Normalise and validate. Don't ever say to someone, that's a big statement. All their feelings are valid. So validate them, normalise the uncomfortable. This isn't about your feeling as a support group. You're the backing singers. So you just have to listen to the lead singer here. And unfortunately, the lead singer is going through a terrible time. So you've got to normalise that terrible and feel comfortable in the uncomfortable. And that's something that as a society in the whole, we are terrible at. But you as a support group of that human can be really good at it. And they will never, ever forget that.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much to Jen, Caro and Elle for being brilliantly open and also for everything they're doing and the energy they put into their work, which must at times be really draining, but hopefully offers real hope to lots of women and just comfort. There were lots of parallels with things that Carrie Ad Lloyd said in the previous episode as well. So if you haven't listened to that, do go back and listen. I had a message from Rachel on Instagram to say both her parents had died recently, a year apart. And she said, I found it really comforting to know that what I have felt and am feeling is normal. So thank you to Carrie Ad for that and to Rachel for messaging me. It's always really good to hear from people. And if you've been listening to episodes and enjoying them, please go and give us a rate and review. Thanks also to Natural Map for sponsoring this series. There's more information in the notes on them and the discount. And we're back in 2 weeks. If you subscribe, you'll get a notification when the next episode goes live. And I hope you're all okay. We have almost made it to the end of January, so brighter days are coming.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.